start Esrogim. We're not going to get too far, but maybe Thursday we'll discuss it. We'll see. We'll try to make some time to discuss more, but we'll start the discussion of Esrogim. Esrogim are unique in that it is described by the Torah as pre-Eitz Hadar. So in addition to the requirement by every mitzvah of Zekeli Vanveu, of having Hidr mitzvah, by Esrogim it is described as it's, by its very nature, as being Hadar. Most Esrogim you're going to find in the store today are already Muhudar, because a guy who's growing Esrogim, who has a paradis of Esrogim, has no motivation to ship out deformed or unusual looking Esrogim, because no one's going to buy them anyway. Most of what you find discussed in Shulchan Aruch, including the black dots that are discussed in Shulchan Aruch that are said to apostle an Esrog when they're on the top part of the Esrog or over the rove of the circumference of the Esrog, do not exist in our stores. So basically even things that look like black dots are not the black dots that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. So what we are choosing from amongst Esrogim is nice Esrogim and nicer Esrogim. We are not choosing, for the most part, apostle Esrogim. There are certain psulim to be aware of, which we'll hopefully get to. A basic look of an Esrog is that an Esrog should look, have a nice gidul, it should have a nice form to it, which we'll discuss in a second. Skin should be yellow with bumps and crevices all over it. That gives it a certain beauty to it. Pitum on the top should be in line with the ukuts on the bottom. It shouldn't be that, you know, the pitum sometimes you see totally off to the side. That's not as nice. It's kosher, but not as nice. An ideal Esrog should not have scabs, bruises, deformities, you know, watermarks, all of those things. All of those things ruin the hidur of the Esrog, but they do not passle the Esrog. Now, very, very rare to find a perfect Esrog. The perfect Esrog is saved for some Hasidish Rebbe who has a chassid that's going to pay $1,000 for it. Very, very rare that you're going to find a really totally perfect Esrog. But you can find a good one, and you're going to have to sacrifice some qualities for others. And there's no real rules necessarily about which qualities are more important than the others. It's whatever's more important to you. So you're going to have to see what your preferences are. The gidul of the Esrog is as follows. An Esrog should be shaped like a tower, wide at the bottom, and it tapers at the top. From about the center of the Esrog up, it starts to narrow, and the topmost section is called the chotem of the Esrog. That's the narrowest part of the Esrog. The more an Esrog resembles that, what I just described to you, the better the gidul of the Esrog is said to be. An Esrog hamurkav is supposedly is said not to have such a nice Esrog shape, and that's why the Gidul was assumed to be important by the Achronim, because the Gidul was a simon that it wasn't Morkav, that it wasn't grafted with another tree. It's unclear whether that's really the Metzias. In fact, the Metzias may be the opposite, that the reason that they make an Esrog and Morkav, that they grafted in the first place, is that it gives it a much nicer look and a much nicer Gidul sometimes. But anyway, that was the assumption that they always work with. Mishabura doesn't mention anything about a nice Gidul. Perhaps Mishabura believes that a Gidul doesn't really matter at all, whether, you know, its overall shape really matters so much. Now, the color of an Esrog, the Mishnah already talks very clearly about the ideal color of an Esrog. The Tosos and Lamed Aleph and Beis in Masechta Sukkah is very clear that the Esrog should be solid yellow. Now, when an Esrog is green, it is usually kosher anyway, because that green is a yellowish green. Only if an Esrog is a very dark green, if it's Yaro Kikarti, the Gemara describes, green like a leek, if it's a very dark green, then that can passel it. Generally avoid dark green Esrogim. Next year it's going to be difficult, because next year Yontif falls out very, very early, so the Esrogim are not going to be ripened. There are tricks to make it ripen more quickly, but we try our best to make it to buy a yellow Esrog or a yellowish Esrog, not an Esrog that's a dark green. Now, one type of hidur is that the Esrog should have a uniform color. It shouldn't have blotches of different colors throughout. And again, there are ways to make the color change, but you try to avoid that if at all possible. Now, what a discoloration can make an Esrog puzzle. Shulchan Aruch talks about black spots, white spots. if we actually had those black and white spots, that could make an esrog possible. But the black and white spots that we often see are usually some foreign matter that's usually it's insecticide or residue or dirt that's become embedded in the esrog. Sometimes the glaze of the esrog will then spread over the insecticide or the dirt and will make it look like it's part of the esrog, but it's really not. It's foreign matter and will not passel the esrog. And usually what will happen is at some point the glaze will wear off and the dirt will just come off. And that will show you that it's really kosher. Second reason you don't have to be concerned about it is that all esrogim have it, and therefore it's considered to be the mara of the esrog. It's considered to be a normal mara ha-esrog. It's not considered to be an abnormality, and that itself makes a kosher. So do not try to remove the black dots on an esrog, especially not with a pin or anything like that, because you're likely to not only take off the black dot, you're likely to take out some of the surface right underneath the skin of the esrog, and then you will have what's called chaser, and a chaser is pasul. If you remove the area right beneath the skin of the esrog, even in the tiniest mashahu of area right beneath the skin of the esrog, you will make the esrog chaser, and that is going to be a pasul esrog. Esrogim very often grow in areas where there's a lot of sand, a lot of loose dirt, and wind blows in those areas, so there's this grayish white dust that covers the esrogim. Now, before they ship them out, they take a sponge and they clean it off. But because an esrog has so many cracks and crevices, and so the sponge will clean off whatever on the outer surface, but very often in the cracks there will be a lot of dirt that's still in there. Now, the problem with that dirt is that it could create an illusion of a real problem, meaning it could look like black dots or white dots, it could look like it's chaser, it could look like a bletel, whatever, but it's still really going to be kosher. That you could take a soft, Q-tip or something, wet Q-tip, and just clean out the dirt that's in that area, and that's not a problem. Red or brown spots that you find on an esrog are usually a bruise from squeezing, from banging the esrog against something. It's a hiddur issue. The esrog is still kosher. Sometimes it'll have a red or brown spot that's just a natural discoloration of the skin and is not necessarily from trauma, but that's called menumer b'mara kosher. That it's menumer, it's speckled, it has certain spots, but the other spots that it has are also kosher. So that esrog, such an esrog that's menumer b'mara kosher, is still going to be kosher. That's a bir alachim tarfesh mem chesif tezayin. It's still going to be kosher, it's just a little less muhudar. When using the esrog, if you hold the esrog too tightly, or your palms sweat too much, and you're holding it in your palms instead of your fingers, so it can cause reddish brown dots because which weren't there when you bought the esrog, because like any fruit, an esrog excretes juices when it's squeezed or when it's hit, and the acid in the juice will oxidize and will turn brown. It will not possibly your esrog, but it will make your esrog less muhudar. So that's why it's not a good idea to just mess around with the esrog all day. Use it when you're using it. Don't like sit there looking at your esrog. Now it's true, the Gemara Masechta Sukkah says that the Anshei Yerushalayim will go around all day, lulavei and biyadeim, that they will go lulavei and biyadam, that they will go around timavakar cholim, and they go to the base manager and lulav biyadam, they go here, they go there, they always have lulav biyadam. But they didn't just carry the esrog alone. Carrying the esrog alone is no kiyum whatsoever. So if you're such a chassid that you walk around all day with your lulav and esrog together, fine, then you can. But short of being mekayim a mitzvah, if you're not being mekayim a mitzvah by holding all dalaminim, it's not a good idea to just mess around with your esrog. To play with your esrog, you're likely to either passel it or at the very least make it less muhudar. Now, a bletel is a scab or a mark that's left on an esrog by a leaf, by a thorn, by a branch, foreign matter that comes into contact while the esrog is developing on the tree. It's, the white mark that you often see on esrogim. It's what they call a bletel. The rules of bletelach are based on the rules of chazazis, because we don't have real chazazis anymore, so we just apply chazazis, which is a blister on esrog. We don't really have that so much, to the rules of a bletel. And the rules is, there are two basic rules. The first rule is that if it can easily be felt when you rub your hand against it, that could be a problem. If it can't be felt when you rub your hand against it, it's not a problem. Second rule is that the blister has to have been formed from the esrog itself. In order for an esrog to be possible, it has to be, again, both of those rules have to be there. It has to be something that you could easily feel, and it comes from the esrog itself. So the first one is just very easy to tell. Just close your eyes and rub your hand across it and see if you could feel the bletel. If you could feel the bletel, then it's then you then have to look into the second issue. The Rama says that mul, which is found on esrogim, some type of discoloration that's found in esrogim, the Rama says all mutter, because it's flush with the esrog. If it's flush with the esrog and you can't feel it, it's all going to be mutter. And the Rama says anyway, it's very common, so it's considered mara ha esrog. It's considered to be the normal look of the esrog. So whatever is typical for the esrog is going to be mutter. So the Mishnah Berurah says we should try to avoid an esrog that has a bletel, but make radin, if you hold like that Rama, that anything that's mara ha esrog, anything that's the normal look of the esrog is kosher, so then it's going to be kosher anyway, because it's mara ha esrog. There is another psal in esrog called chaser. Chaser comes up in three different areas. It could come from missing flesh of the esrog. The esrog is made up of the glaze on the very, very outer surface. Then there's the yellow skin, and then right underneath the yellow skin there's the basar, the flesh of the esrog. If any of the flesh is missing from the esrog, that's chaser. It could also be if there's damaged skin. That's called niklaf, that the skin layer itself is damaged, is niklaf. That could be a shaila of chaser. And third shaila of chaser is if the pitum is missing. If the pitum gets broken off, that could be a shaila of chaser. If the glaze is missing, or just a bit of the yellow layer is missing, that is not a problem of chaser. However, very often, once the yellow is missing, there's no way to tell whether a little bit of the area underneath it is also missing. So if it's missing a little glaze, doesn't have that gleam, that shine, that's fine. But, you know, over a certain area, that's fine. But if it's missing some of the yellow, then it's very hard to know if it's missing a little bit of the area underneath it also, and therefore it should be assumed to be possible. There are ways to tell and to check if something is chaser, but it's very, very difficult to really be able to know and to check unless you have a lot of experience looking at esrogim. A lot of times you see black dots, brown dots. Most of those are not chaser. Most of those are not shaylas, really. There's nothing missing from the esrog itself. The pitum is something that obviously we're very sensitive to. Why do some esrogim have a pitum and some don't? Every esrog starts with a pitum. It's part of the blossom. Usually the pitum falls off with the rest of the blossom. However, because people like a pitum on their esrog, they spray stuff on it so that it won't fall off when the rest of the blossom falls off. They spray like some hardening thing that causes the pitum to stay. That's why we have so many pitum esrogim. Now, some prefer not to have a pitum because then you don't have the risk of it falling off later. Others prefer an esrog with a pitum because then you know that it didn't once have a pitum that then fell off. So, you know, different preferences whether you have a pitum or not. When the pitum has fallen off at an early stage, there's a small depression shaped like an upside down cone at the tip of the chotem, at the very tip of the esrog. The sides of that depression are smooth and natural looking. If there's no indentation and the top is just flat, smooth, and white, then that's probably the pitum fell off later. So if it's like a brownish, you know, it looks like it's covered over almost, so that happened on the tree and that's fine. But if it's, you see, like it looks like it's cut off and it's white at the top, so then it likely happened after it was removed from the tree, and that could be a psul. The second, another clue that an esrog grew without a pitum is the rim right around the area of the pitum. An esrog whose pitum fell off at a very early stage will have a thin, light brown ridge around the rim, and that alone is enough to tell you, even without looking for the inverted cone to see the shape of it, just looking at the coloring, the brown around the rim, that's usually enough to tell you when the pitum fell off, when the pitum did not fall off. When you're looking at an esrog, very important, you don't need to look like this, you know, right up in front of your face. You don't need... The reason people use magnifying glasses is they think they're going to be able to tell with the magnifying glass if it's chaser. You're not looking for dots with the magnifying glass. Anything you're gonna see a dot, it's not possible if you can't see it with the naked eye. And the way the Shulchan Aruch says, from the distance that you would normally hold it when you're being yotzei the mitzvah. So you hold it where as far away from your eye as you would hold it when you're being yotzei the mitzvah. To hold it much closer is really unnecessary, entirely unnecessary. So and when you're looking at an esrog, even for the beauty, you look mostly at the chotem, at the top part of the esrog is where you look for most of these issues. Right? There's a lot more to talk about with an esrog. We have to talk about the pedigree of an esrog is a major issue. Morkov and how we can track whether an esrog was morkov or not morkov, but I guess that will suffice for now when it comes to esrog. And I guess maybe we'll have one more time in halachas at some point on the different varieties of esrog and what is more of a chashash morkov, less of a chashash morkov. But for now, that will suffice in terms of picking esrog.